helping realtors on Vancouver Island stay connected, current, and on the cutting edge. This is the Vancouver Island Real Estate Show. Here's your host, Braden Wheatcroft.
Morning, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in or watching this after the fact. This is the Vancouver Island Real Estate Show. I'm your host, Braden Wheatcroft, and I am so happy to be here with you today and really excited to introduce you to one of my good friends and really a guy that I look up to, as a mentor, as a leader in this industry, Mr. Taylor Hack. His bio and list of accomplishments is ridiculously long, way longer than someone who's been in the business as long as he has, but we're going to talk a little bit about that in a second. But here's what I can tell you is Taylor is a REMAX agent based out of Edmonton, River City, I believe, is the brokerage he works from. And he's been licensed since 2013. And what's remarkable about Taylor is his accomplishments, yes, but it's actually the time frame in which he's been able to achieve them. In a ridiculously short amount of time, Taylor's gone from basically being doors open on his business to being in the top 2% of the REMAX network globally. Within just a matter of years. And one of the reasons why he's such an effective and powerful, impactful agent is he's very process-oriented. You're going to get a feel for that very, very quickly. Every time I chat with Taylor, he makes my head spin about, you know, how I could be more systemized, how I could have automation, and all that. And I have to say that one of the things that I love working with him the most about is also that he's a great leader. So he's gone from solo agent to a team leader in a short amount of time as well. And so he's not just a systems guy, he's a heart and soul guy too. So with all that being said, please join me in welcoming Mr. Taylor Hack. Taylor, good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. How's it going? So tell me, there's got to be like probably 30 or 40 degree difference between the temperature here in Edmonton right now and over there on Vancouver Island.
Yeah, well, you know, I made a bit of a choice this morning when I was getting prepared for an interview. I thought, well, I'll wear my suit jacket up here because this is all you can see. But I'm actually wearing shorts right now because it's like 33 degrees and sunny outside in Victoria.
I don't want to talk about it. We're expecting snow today. But I actually like that. You know, what I find is that cold places make warm people.
Okay. Well, sure. Let's go with that. I'll give you that much. But we were just chatting offline before we went live here about the different circles that we both run in. And I don't know about you, but I find it really interesting that cross-section between the REMAX network and the Richard Robbins network. Tell me a little bit about what you enjoy being in both those circles.
Well, really, like, this is part of me forging myself as a realtor. Like, I always believe that doing hard things scrapes away the elements that aren't the true you. And only, like, when you look at your end goals, only the true you can actually get to them. And so the rest of the journey is kind of molding yourself through doing the things that it takes to become capable of getting to your goal. So when I came into real estate in general, I was very focused on that element of become the company that you keep. So that's what led me to the REMAX network. And then it was my second month of real estate where I saw Richard speak, which I set as a goal. So that December of my first year is when I signed up for coaching with Richard Robbins and team. And then it would have been, I think 11 months later that I was onto the Master's Advisory Council of that group. So then the company I kept became industry leaders across Canada and the United States. And then
I want to ask you that Master's Advisory Council, what is that all about? Because that's one of the things that I've really enjoyed, just been watching from a distance through the RRI community. But can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so the Master's Advisory Council is by invitation only. And from my understanding at the time, I think I was the 13th man. So now I believe that there's four councils and each one of them has somewhere in the range of 10 members or thereabouts. And what it is it's people that are being recognized for the level of accomplishment. So there's definitely some prerequisites to be in that group as far as volume goes and also your ability to contribute. And then the value of being in that group is once a month we get together with a conference call that is curated by Richard himself. So he comes on and assigns us reading. We read together. We talk about big ideas together. There's elements there that help us because, unfortunately, the higher you go, the thinner the air gets. So trying to find people that will contribute to your business or that you can have like very significant takeaways from in a short amount of time, that becomes less and less. And now as I complete that network, I also get into some exclusive events with RE/MAX. So things like their elite retreats and some other qualified events. And now a few of my friends are actually on the top 10 list of RE/MAX realtors in the world. So that's what I keep doing, is trying to become or trying to show through contribution that I should get to sit at this table. And then they keep giving me tables to sit at, and I keep trying to rock those tables. So I really approach it from contribution first.
Well, and here we are sitting at another table, and here you are contributing. So I really appreciate you taking the time. I know you're a busy guy. Now, I was reading a little bit about your previous history before you got into real estate. So as I understand it, you were a mortgage broker and you also worked in auto sales. Is that right?
Yeah, it's so funny because when you look at it as a body of work, it was all leading. So when I was 17, I started selling appliances. As an adult, I've never really received a regular paycheck. I've been on 100% commission the entire time. I went into the car industry being very young to be selling new cars. And when I left the car industry, the job offer I had would have made me one of the youngest Lexus management in Canada. And I left there to go and do mortgages. And so when you look back at it, it's so my consensus of the average situation is really odd, because I negotiated against the average family in cars on the highest price item that they ever really negotiate themselves. And I did that repeatedly. So getting to understand how people experience stress, what they see of a negotiation process or the ability to buy thing and those hot buttons and as well as pain points that kind of facilitate that or outline that process, those things became very key. And then I also think that there's very few people that would be able to simulate the amount of negotiation ability that comes out of the car industry. That is a great way to get that. You even hear hedge fund managers that are like, man, you're really good in the room. And the guy responds and is like, yeah, tell that to the guy who renewed my Audi lease last week. He took me to the cleaners.
Yeah. And yeah. It's interesting. I've definitely noticed that there are a lot of the colleagues I work with that have a successful real estate business may have started in the automotive industry. Now, we're here today to talk about your buyer process, or as you've branded it, the better buyer process. Before we launch into that, I'm curious to know, how has your previous experiences in auto sales and your mortgage brokerage business, how has that informed your buyer process in real estate? You're talking about the negotiation with your automotive clients, but I'm curious, has a lot of the thoughts or ideas that you've had from those previous experiences shown up in your real estate business?
Oh, of course. Yeah, they're outlined everywhere. Like the what I really learned going through mortgages is, because I was a mortgage specialist for a major bank, and most banks are very process oriented, right? And so that's where I really got to see the value of what a process would do. And notice that when you come into real estate, anything that you want, any component of your business, in most cases, you have to build it yourself. So there are places like a lot of people don't understand that that's a big element of coaching, is that you become part of a network. And that network is almost like a trickle down. So some of the things that the advisory council are working on will eventually become content for the group. And then also it's this community of sharing. So in a situation where you don't have like a an informed buyer's guide or something to that effect, like those tools can be provided to you. For me, I'm on the other side, meaning that whenever I see like tracks in the snow ahead of me, I automatically assume that everybody is following those tracks. So I tend to vary from there. So what I was looking for is to solve the common problems associated with the buyer process from both, like first and foremost, from the buyer perspective. Like the way that I see companies is kind of inverted. So a lot of people see a CEO as being at the top, and then it's almost like a pyramid, and at the bottom is the clients. And it's almost this trickle down effect, whereas I actually see it in reverse. So the CEO is at the bottom and he's supporting the staff or she, and then they're supporting the clients and the clients are on top. Mm-hmm. So looking at it from that element, what I needed my clients to understand is why we're valuable, because that was the biggest disenfranchisement when it came to buyer process. So what we know about the regular buyer process or the regular buyer experience is they normally contact an agent, and the most common contact first is a listing agent.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go and meet that listing agent at a property, and that's where their first experience, especially if they're first-time home buyers, is that that person is trying to convince them to buy a house, and they feel as though that's the same as the other salesperson experiences in their life, like when they walked into a car dealership or a furniture store or so on, right?
Mm-hmm.
So automatically you start to see these barriers. Or they talk to a realtor that they plan to work with, like an agent, and the agent just it shows them that they're not going to be treated well right off the get-go. So if you were to call the average agent out there, I imagine that they'd say, hey, Braden, you know, we're really excited to have you as a buyer. Why don't you tell me a little bit about the houses you like, and then on Saturday we can go and take a look at some. Is that your experience as to like how they normally start out?
Well, I think one of the challenges as an industry is that there isn't a defined process. So that could very well be the average experience. And then you also have a number of different agents who operate in a different way. So I'm always hesitant to say that there's one way of doing something, because what I found at least is that when people get into this business, I mean, you tell me about your first 6 to 12 months in the business. I mean, how much of this process from either your brokerage or a colleague in the office was clearly laid out for you? I imagine not very much.
And to tell you the truth, I would have rejected it anyway.
Fair enough. Okay.
So what I mean by that is that coming into real estate, I didn't happen into real estate. I was building to here. So when I was doing mortgages, I was actually studying the agents around me, looking at the difference between high producers and non-producers, looking at the difference in how they treated their clients and what type of results they got from that, and taking a look for weak points. So even if somebody would have told me, hey, listen, when you meet with a buyer, this is what you should do. But everybody's kind of looking for that end goal. And in most cases, that's a short-sighted goal. That's a transaction goal.
Right.
My company,
as opposed to what?
Well, look at your value proposition or your why. Mm-hmm. So here at the Hack & Company team, what we're looking for is to provide a remarkable experience so that our clients can get to the communities where they can be community contributors.
Mm.
So think about what we're doing for people. We're moving families closer to schools or away from neighbors that they don't like, or we're moving people closer to jobs. We're making their life more efficient by controlling drive time. There's so many things that we're doing to help families achieve goals. And what we actually want to create is happy, referring clients, right? So we're not
absolutely. That's the long view, right? If we think about the lifetime value of a client to our business, you know, it's something that is, you're not just in it for that transaction. You're in it for the introductions and the future and serving those people. And the fact that you have such a deeply connected why to your business is a pretty cool thing. We're here to talk about process. And I'm curious from your perspective, you were talking about, it sounds to me like you're spending a lot of time looking around, observing. You're observing the pain points of the average consumer when you were negotiating automotive sales. You were observing your colleagues in the industry when you got into the business, seeing where their, you know, weakness might be or where their shortcomings might be. And you've taken all of this and you've put it together into what you call the better buyer process. If you could give us the 40,000 foot view looking down, I mean, what are the components of that process?
Well, the components of the process are designed to overcome the obstacles. So the obstacles that we see are people don't defer to realtors as experts. They look at them like clerks. And that's because, you know, a lot of realtors approach it like clerks, meaning that you as my client, tell me what you want and give me instructions. Could you imagine if your doctor treated you that way?
No,
hey,
that would be a little scary.
Coming in, here's the big medicine cabinet. What do you think looks fun?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that type of stuff doesn't work very well. Or look at the common problems where people leave agents for other agents just out of convenience.
Right.
What I see when I look at that, like we're talking about awareness, what that first agent did to lose that client was that their relationship was based on convenience.
Mm.
So the same thing, if you start the way that I see the average agent start, which is like, hey, thanks for calling me. Why don't you tell me a little bit about the houses you like? Let's go see them. Well, what that person is teaching that client is how to treat them. And they should treat them like someone who just opens doors, because that's all they're doing. So this is the biggest element is that what we want from our clients is to treat us like we're valuable.
Right.
Isn't it wonderful to be treated like you're valuable? Somebody calls you at lunchtime or at dinner time and they're like, I am so sorry. I'm so sorry to bother you. Right. Or they tell you afterwards that they didn't call you at dinner time because they didn't want to bother you. That's what valuable treat feels like. So now that we understand what we're looking for, how do we create that?
Mm-hmm. So you get the call.
I modeled it after our listing process.
Right.
So when you looked at the difference between how realtors treat buyers and sellers, for most sellers, it's like, okay, give me some information. Let's go for a walkthrough. Tell me about what's important to you. Here's what I do. This is the value proposition that I offer. Here's some statistics to back that. And then when we run into a buyer, we're like, hey, what kind of stuff do you like? When do you want to meet? We're doing nothing to demonstrate value. And so at the end of a listing agreement, what do? They sign a listing contract.
Right.
They obligate themselves to you. They commit themselves to you because you've earned it. Whereas
they make a choice. They choose you as to represent them.
Without any type of understanding of why you create or how you create value or why they need you, it's no wonder that the majority of agents, even in required boards where they are required to get buyer agreements signed, they don't do it until they write offers.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something right now. I mean, you're based out of Alberta and in British Columbia, there's a big push right now over agency and you know, whether or not consumers can have limited dual agency relationships. There's a large portion of realtors right now in this province that would love to see exclusive buyer's agency mandated, absolutely required. But as you say, that doesn't necessarily solve the problem. The problem might actually be, we don't know how to set our relationship up for success from the start. And that's what you're talking about, is how do you lead with value? And how do you have someone go through the process and either opt in or opt out of working with you? Because, to me, the sign of a good process is one where you're able to sift through clients that are going to be a good fit for you or clients who aren't. And I'm just as happy as an outcome of someone saying, you know what, I appreciate the time you spent. I don't think we're going to be a good fit for each other. That, to me, is the sign of a well laid out process. What do you think?
I agree. And also, when you look at the soft side of that, when you look at the empathetic side of that, it's connection over transaction. Okay? And I think that anybody who's looking at this should always use that priority. Connection over transaction. So when I'm looking to meet with somebody and bring them in for a consultation, because that's what we do, and like just like a seller consultation, we do a buyer consultation.
Right.
And we bring them in because we need them to see how to value us. So that
can we pause there for a sec, Taylor? I just want to – two things. One is I've noticed we've got a number of viewers here, and I just want to encourage you, if you guys have questions for Taylor, please feel free to comment. At the very end, we're going to circle back to any questions, so please just comment below. What you were saying there about the buyer process of having someone come in no different than a listing. Now, with listings, the consumer expects the consultation or the listing presentation or the walkthrough. Buyers don't. Buyers have been trained through the industry that they can call the name on the sign and you will show up, you know, in 20 minutes, no matter what time of the day it is. And so there's this going against the grain that a lot of agents who try to implement a buyer process feel, where they get the call, they're well-intended, you know, they're getting coached and their coach says, you got to get them in for a consultation. And when you say, I'd love to show you that home, Taylor, but you know what, why don't you come into the office first? There's huge reluctance on the buyer side.
Okay,
do you disarm that?
So first off, you need to decide what's acceptable to you and what's not acceptable to you. So if you're like, here's the difference between people that do perform and people that don't perform. So people that don't perform, the way that they look at this is, I'm just going to try my best and see what happens. I'm open to everything. I hope something works. The people that do perform say, this is my goal. Now I need to build my way there. So I'm one of those secondary people. So in 2013, when I started in real estate, if you were not willing to commit to me as a client, I was not willing to commit to you as a realtor, period, full stop.
That must have been scary for you.
And now
that scary?
Is it scary?
Was that scary to make that decision so early on in your career? Like, you know, it's a bold move to make. I'm just like, what was that like for you? Because there must have been times where someone wasn't willing to conform that maybe you were second guessing yourself. I'm just curious because it's challenging when you're in the position where you don't know where your next your sale is going to come from. But I just want to walk me through what was going through your mindset at that time.
So my mindset at that time was, how do I deliver a remarkable experience? So what I mean by remarkable is, do what you do so well that others can't resist telling their friends and family about you. So when I look at how I could craft a remarkable experience, I didn't believe that I could craft a remarkable experience with people that were transient in my business. So if I was scrambling to show houses on short notice, how would I craft an experience there? If I was, if I didn't know whether or not those people were going to transact with me, how could I not approach that from scarcity, where I was like, you know, where I would hold back? You know, what I mean is like, imagine standing in front of a fireplace and saying, listen, you know, when you give me heat, I'll give you wood. It doesn't work like that.
No.
So what
was mindset played a big role?
Was that what I would do for people wouldn't be worthwhile. Because the absence of value is why they don't want to meet with you. Like, price becomes an issue in the absence of value.
So what was that magnet, that value proposition that you were able to put to a stranger on the phone or through an email, because you get a realtor.ca lead or a lead street lead through Remax and they just want to see this house? How do you articulate that in a way where it's compelling that they do want to meet with you?
Well, I will show them the one house. So if that's the way that I meet them, so like, let's say that, so the ways that we meet clients are all going to be different. So there's the ones that we're talking about right now are the hardest to reach ones. So strangers calling on a sign call or calling on essentially a website lead or something to that effect, right? So that's the hardest to reach group, but that's actually not the most common client to agents. If you interview the majority of agents, they'll tell you that the most of their business is repeat or referral.
Absolutely.
So in that case, why the heck are these people running around to show houses, and why are they setting all of their policies for the scarce, hardest to reach places?
You built it from the hot side of the business out.
More likely. And if friends and family are more likely, won't those people come in, sit down and meet with you?
Absolutely.
So now that you know where you can try first, try building this. And what I mean by that is that when somebody sits down with you, like, here's a question that I think stumps the majority of realtors, and I also think that that's sad. Why should you be my realtor? Mm-hmm. If you ask the majority of agents that, a lot of them, like, well, because I'm awesome, or because maybe I have these accomplishments.
Right.
But the truth of the matter is that they should be able to answer that question honestly, accurately, and the answer should be compelling. So what I do is I give my clients that question, but I give it to them in an experience. So when people come to a buyer's consultation, what that experience is like is we sit down, we overview the process. So we have all the discussions about deposits, because sometimes people need to move money and they blow their deposit window. That doesn't happen in my office. We also talk about what home inspections are, how much they cost, who does them, what time period. We talk about pending periods, so nobody's on vacation during the pending period. We talk about the value of the process and also the depth of the process so that they understand what it's like and what to expect next, who the experts are involved, and so on, right? And then we actually open the MLS to them. So I let them drive the pro tools of the MLS through me. So not only can we see the properties that you like, we can see all the information that's available, the history, all that, everything a realtor can see. And the experience is that I'm driving you through that and I walk through a ton of houses. So I can give you reference points about, you know, is this the right size for that type of property? Like, when does a bungalow kind of find its stride in your marketplace? What's a little squidgy for those three bedrooms upstairs? What is going to be maybe so big that at this price point, it probably won't be in good condition? Those types.
What's the relationship between sale price and assessed value? You know, that's one of those things that until they see it on your screen, it can become a huge hurdle when you're out in the field and they want to write an offer and they're just sold on assessed value means market value.
Okay. So these are all the traps that happen when you don't have a process. When you don't have a process, everything can blindside you. The way somebody sees what a normal deposit is, even I've even heard of agents having clients walk away when they ask them for ID. Because they, you know, if you don't give them information, all they have is the preconceived notions they have. And what we know is uninformed buyers will make lower offers and uninformed sellers will set higher list prices.
So it sounds to me, Taylor, like that you've taken a lot of the questions that you get in the field, the common ones, and you've incorporated those into your presentation. It's like machine learning for buyers. Like as you start noticing a trend, and I get asked this a lot when I'm out there, I'd rather pre-explain this in my process up front. Is that fair to say that that's part of how you built this?
Yeah, and look at all the available models. Like what exactly is a contract? A contract is a way for us to define terms in advance for all the common rub points that could happen during any transaction, right?
And what goes through your mind when your board releases a new contract with a new clause?
I'm excited.
Yeah. I think of uh-oh.
I'm excited is because yeah. I'm an adapter.
Right. And I think of it in the sense of when I see that when there's a change to a clause in a standard contract, it's often because there's been a huge issue. You know, some realtor, whether intentional or not, has made a significant mistake. There's probably an E&O claim. And now the council goes, okay, we better address this in the standard contract. So in a lot of respects, that's how the contracts are built. And so it sounds like your buyer presentation is built like that.
Yeah, to an extent, right? But we want to give people like, I think that, remember when we were talking about why should you be my realtor? Mm-hmm. Well, also in that same kind of vein, is that how do you affect change? And also what exactly do you do? And what I mean by that is that most realtors think that they buy and sell houses. Can any of us sign a purchase contract?
It would be unadvisable.
Yeah. So obviously we don't buy and sell houses unless we're talking about our own investments or principal residence, right?
So when you think about that in the process, you're leading with education. And I've heard Richard Robbins say this a lot over the years I've been involved with the organization is that education is the highest form of sales. When you're sitting through there, what are some of the comments that you get from clients? They're in your office. You've got their hands on the wheel of the Pro Tools, as you suggested. They're going through the MLS. You're overcoming the objections that they haven't even had yet because you've informing them up front. What is the feedback you get from your clients?
Actually, the highest compliment ever is by the time that we're done the buyer process and showing them what we do, they are terrified to enter the market without us. They,
absolutely.
You know, when we talk about what we do and how we do it, when we help them understand all the reference points and show them what they don't know, mm-hmm. If they're not compelled by that, then what you're doing is you're sitting in front of someone who doesn't change their mind when they receive new information. That is the definition of stupidity.
I was recently taking a PDP course. It's actually a CREA one. And I believe it's something like elevating customer service in the realtor brand or something like that. And it was actually really good. And one of the things that was introduced to me was this idea of the value gap. And the value gap exists between what your client thinks they know and what you're able to show them they don't. And so if you know, in this industry, this information world we live in, if your client walks into your open house or into your office on floor duty or whatever, and they know about a property or a neighborhood better than you do, the value gap, your value to the transaction relationship isn't very high. And so it sounds to me like your process is you're showing them, okay, I understand you're a savvy buyer. Did you consider this, this, and this? Well, all of a sudden you've created a tremendous amount of value between what they knew and what now they realize they don't know, which makes you very, very valuable.
And that's the idea is that if you can't create value for that person, you shouldn't participate.
Yeah, fair enough.
Right? Like that should be the litmus test. That should be on us. It shouldn't be how can I convince this person to work with me? It should be, can I create enough value for this person that I should be the one who works with them?
Mm-hmm. Now,
there's too much entitlement and not enough requirement.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you think of this process, like you started the creating of a buyer process, I imagine early in your career, maybe from day one, because this is just how you're wired. But you've transitioned over the last few years from being a successful solo agent to being a team leader. So now really, you're one step removed from the client in this case. So tell me a little bit about how, you know, what have been some of the challenges of getting, you know, team members or people within your organization on board with this process?
Well, I can say that I don't have a lot of challenges when it comes to that, because just like I would reject even the premise of not doing this, like not helping people understand how you can help, like this helps them form better questions. It actually makes us better agents. What I mean by that is when I have a client who calls me and says, hey, listen, I want to go see this for sale by owner, I'm under contract with that client. I'm required to do that. And it makes me a better agent, because instead of worrying and wondering what's going to happen if they like that house, I am already on board, ready to go, and I am about to engage that with my full effort. And that's the difference about being an agent under contract or an agent that's not. And most people are taught what a real estate agent is by the people that don't require that don't have that level of engagement, because most of their clients are essentially leaving them somehow, right? And frankly, I want to be the one they're leaving them for.
So if you were, if I was to join your team or any of our audience viewers right now, day one, we're working at Hack & Co. And we understand you've got this great process. Like what would you do in your onboarding to get me up to speed with your buyer process?
Watch me do it once.
Okay.
At the end of our market evaluation, sometimes people clap.
Are you serious?
I'm dead serious. At the end of our buyer's consultations, I simply ask them this question. So does it sound like I should be your agent?
Mm.
They can't wait to sign. If all of your clients felt that way about you, mm-hmm. and you chose not to, like, or could feel that way about you, and you choose an alternative to this, are you getting that result is the end question. So if my agents sit with me on a buyer's consultation and see the result and still don't want to do something like that, then I just ask them, okay, how do you plan to be this effective otherwise?
Right, right. And speaking of effectiveness, I mean, to put things into perspective for people who are watching, there was a point in your career, I think it was just after you finished your second year, where you went on a streak in a down market of 60 transactions in 6 months. Do I have those numbers right?
Yep. So that's what I mean, that you need
that's
to
incredible. Build
your capacity.
Yeah.
So when you're doing like when you do 10 deals per month, month over month for like 180 day period, in a market that's down, so you're not just going to show one house. It's not like you just capitalized on the listings available to you. Working with both buyers and sellers. And booking my own showings on my listings and various other aspects of my business, running and creating my business. If I did not have processes like this, those efficiencies would simply be out of reach.
Okay. I want to be respectful of your time here. We're coming up towards the end. I want to ask you one last question, because I always try to get something tangible to our viewers, because I feel like we could talk for hours on this stuff. Okay, I'm a new agent or perhaps I've been experienced but haven't had a process. I haven't either needed one or just had the desire to create one. I mean, what would be the first couple steps if you were coaching me on how I could start developing my own better buyer process in my business?
Well, what I would suggest is the same thing as market evaluation. So find some people around you that are friends of yours and do one with them. So like if you're looking for ideas as like what think of it from a buyer's shoes, what do you need to know to engage the market effectively? Talk to the agents in your office and say, okay, if I was a buyer, what's the one thing you wish I would understand?
Mm-hmm.
And it's empathy that leads you there. It's understanding what it's like to be in those shoes and genuinely wanting to help them before you help yourself.
Absolutely. That's fantastic advice. So thank you very much. Now, Taylor, I know you you do a lot of public speaking, whether it's for Richard Robbins or Remax. If people want to learn more from you, engage with your content, I mean, other than just reaching out to you by email, what would be the best way to connect and learn more from you?
Well, when it comes down to it, I have been expanding as a public speaker. Richard Robbins and Remax regularly ask me throughout North America in order to do this, as well as some other entities. And I would say that would be part of it is that if you want to see more from me and you know someone who's organizing a convention like this, get them in touch with me, because I'd love to come and tell as many people, I don't actually believe in holding on to my own processes. So I want you to know that none of this information is secret, but I'm also incredibly busy. So the likelihood that I would be able to take somebody through this individual by individual is unlikely. But if there's a venue where I can deliver this type of value, I want you to know that I don't hold anything back. I believe that tomorrow's tailor is going to be progressed past today's ideas. And I want to obligate myself to that. So that's why I give all my information away.
Fantastic. Well, I'm looking forward to meeting tomorrow's tailor because it's been fun to watch you grow over the last couple of years. So thank you so much for taking time out of your day. I know you got a lot on your plate and you guys are crushing it. So just want to say thank you on behalf of our audience here for taking the time to share some of your wisdom with us.
Hey, and thanks for having me on, and I really appreciate that you're doing this. Like, for anybody who is getting familiar with Braden Wheatcroft as somebody who is doing this type of content, I really want you to know that his understanding of real estate is incredibly deep. Like, Braden, you've been around some of the top producers in the world for a long time. You know, when you look at your call-out list or the people that you could have on to this podcast, you're really talking about people that are creating and changing the industry. And so I do appreciate that you do this and that you facilitate this, because I know that you're the guy asking the questions, and the questions are well crafted. But, you know, for people watching this, they should really understand that Braden could answer the majority of these questions himself. You know, this could just be the Braden show. But the
no one would watch it. Yeah. Well, I appreciate that, Taylor. And the working title internally for this show is actually titled People Smarter Than Braden. So as it turns out, the list is very, very long. And thanks for being on it.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, man.
Thanks for having me on.
All right. Appreciate it. See you soon.
You bet. Cheers.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, there you have it, Mr. Taylor Hack. What a guy. Very, very intellectual, very hardworking. And I have to say, he's just got so much information to share. And one of the things I love about Taylor, and it really speaks to the RRI philosophies of giving starts to the receiving process, he is more than willing to share all of his advice. And he believes that it makes him better. I love he comes from a place of abundance. So make sure next time you see him at a conference, say hi to him, thank him for the content, and just let him know how much you appreciate it. So with all that being said, I'm really excited for our next week's guest. More information to come on that. Still kicking around some ideas for the show. But I think it's going to be a really good one. So hopefully you tune in. And I'd be curious. I mean, at this point in time, I think we're on episode 7 or 8. And frankly, up to this point, we've been kind of making it up as we go. It started with the BC budget announcement and me recognizing that we needed to get some people out there who could add some value to the conversation. And that's when I first reached out to my friend Keith Roy, and you know, that led to a conversation with Kyle Kerr, and next thing you know, 7 weeks later, here we are, and we've got this show. So I guess what I'm trying to say is I want your feedback, and I would love ideas, whether it be on speakers or topics that you'd like us to cover. I've got a long list myself, but of course, it really what I care most about is what would bring value to you right now in your business. As Taylor said, I've got a big network, but at the end of the day, I want to make sure that network is geared up and pointed in a direction that's going to provide value to you. So that's all I got for today. Please send me some feedback if you have some. Otherwise, I'll look forward to chatting with you guys next week. All right. Bye for now.